Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks for hanging around with me. Bill Treasurer is our guest, and Bill is a guy who has made a large part of his life about taking risks, only he's done it in a calculated way, at least most of the time. At least the things he'll tell us about have all been calculated, and he talks to people. He helps people. He works with people on how to be courageous, how to take risks the right way. He's got a book called Right Risks, 10 Powerful Principles for Taking Giant Leaps with Your Life, and he's also known as Captain Inferno. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Jim, thanks for having me back. It's good to talk to you.
It's good to have you back there, Captain Inferno. Tell the audience why I called you that.
Well, you know, I had a very unusual job. For 7 years, I used to travel around the country, and my uniform every single day was a Speedo.
Well, that's a visual I really didn't need there, Bill, but go ahead with the rest of the story.
I am a guy who was a member of the U.S. high diving team, and I used to dive off of 100-foot platforms. To give you a sense of what that is, that's about the height of a 10-story building, three times higher than they go in the Olympic Games.
Those are the kinds of falls when people jump off of bridges from 100 feet, they don't live, usually.
Yeah, it's true. There was an element of true danger where you were putting your life on the line. And then at our evening, and this was the U.S. high diving team was an aquatic entertainment production that we would perform at different amusement parks like Marine Land down in Florida and Six Flags over Texas and actually most of the Six Flags parks throughout the country. And in fact, I got to travel in Europe and up through Canada, and it was terrific. For 7 years, I was a member of the U.S. high diving team. And every evening, the last show of the evening would culminate in a fire dive. And we'd have a visit by Captain Inferno,
yeah. And
we'd be wearing a cape that literally was soaked in regular old gasoline,
what?
And we'd light ourselves on fire in front of
gasoline?
The audience. Gasoline?
You couldn't find something else to burn besides gasoline?
This was low tech.
Well, and, you know, I got to give you one of my. Well, I got to ask you this question. This is like the country music song. I know what you were feeling, but what were you thinking?
Well, I'm not sure that we do much thinking in our 20s.
I see. Yeah, I can see that.
It was,
but still, you practiced. You took. I mean, there was a certain element of courage. There was a certain adrenaline going there. But you did practice. You calculated it. You knew how to hit the water, and it was a calculated risk, wasn't it?
Absolutely, and the thing is that I was a springboard diver for years and years before I ever became a professional diver, and so, you know, I was very used to doing diving and to being part of an aquatic entertainment production anyway. And when we started the high diving show, the interesting thing though, Jim, is that I'm a high diver who happens to be afraid of heights.
Yeah, I remember that now.
And I think that's actually
What's wrong with this picture, huh?
But I think that that's how people tend to confront their risks. You see, we judge our risks according to what's fearful for us. And each person has different fears, and for what's risky for me may not be risky for you. And really, for me, the way to overcome my fear of heights was to move towards it.
What was it like the first time you jumped from 100 feet?
Oh, I have to tell you, it was just absolutely petrifying.
Well, see, I remember the first time. I used to dive a little bit too. I never was very good at it. I could do a couple of three things, but I never was really trained at it. But I liked diving when I was a kid. I remember the first time I walked out on a high dive, which is what, 2 meters?
Yeah, 3 meters.
3 meters. I mean, 3 meters. Right. I used to remember when I walked out on a high dive, and I looked out, and I couldn't even, you know, I almost couldn't even see the other end of the pool. And I remember how frightened I was, and I thought, you know, it looked a lot higher than it really was.
Oh, you know.
So imagine 100 feet.
It's 100 feet up, but it's 1,000 feet down. I mean, you are looking at basically a silver dollar that you're going to be diving into from
right.
that height.
Because this is not an Olympic pool you're diving into either, is it?
No, it's a tank. Very often it was a tank that we had put together. And it was, you know, from heights of 100 feet, sometimes the tank was only 10 feet deep.
And you know,
didn't give you much stopping room.
And, you know, Bill, a lot of people out there right now are either thinking about starting a business or they don't have enough capital. They don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. or they're in a business and they know they need to go to the next level, they need to do something else because what they're doing either isn't working or it's not going to work for a lot longer, and they got to be feeling like they're on that 100-foot platform looking down into a little silver dollar, don't they?
Exactly. And this is the whole premise of my book, is that, you know, everybody faces a high dive somewhere in their life. In particular, the entrepreneur or the person who's in a stifling job that wants to start their own business, but they've got all sorts of fear and doubt around it. How do they take their high dive when it would really be in the best interest of their life, but how do they do so in a way that will preserve their safety and yet still be spirited and have a lot of upside potential? And the same feelings that I had, Jim, at the 100-foot high dive ladder, that first high dive down in Texas, where my palms were sweating, where I felt like I was choking, where there were butterflies in my stomach, all of those same sensations, your listener who's considering starting their own business, or maybe they have a small business and are considering bringing on a couple of employees, those same nervous feelings are going to be striking them as well.
You know, Bill, I was just thinking about you making that first dive, and I'm imagining the way that they got you to do it was they set you on fire, and you knew the only way you could put it out was to dive into the water. And sometimes that happens in small business. I mean, I've taken risks that I didn't want to take, but it was sort of it was less of a risk than not doing something.
You know, that's true. Sometimes you're taking it out of desperation. Very often you're taking it as a competitive response. You have to take the risk because your competitors are doing mm-hmm. so. I would rather be in the position of intentionally driving my own risks and selecting my own risks than having to take them out of force of somebody else.
Right. Well, but that takes a little bit of, that takes some forethought, that takes some foresight, that takes being committed to not doing crisis management, doesn't it?
It takes a lot of forethought. It takes a lot of leadership, really. And the truth is, Jim, you can't be an entrepreneur. You can't be an innovator to think outside the box, right? You can't be a leader unless you're willing to make bold decisions. And bold decisions are, by default, taking risks. And so my whole, the book is about taking risk. My company is about courage and such. And really what we're talking about is courage, because the application mm-hmm. of courage in action. If you're going to be a courageous person, you have to take risks. There's all sorts of literature about risk management, which is about minimizing, avoiding, and mm-hmm. controlling risk. But at the end of the day, you also have to take risk. So I propose something called risk leadership, which comes with a new presupposition, which is that you have to take risks. So how do we do so in a safe way?
Bill, stand by. We're going to talk about that some more when we come back after these messages. We're going to talk about risk leadership. And remember, folks, when you're courageous, that's when you are brave and you've had time to think about it and you still do it. 20 after. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Bill Treasurer, the author of Right Risk. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Bill Treasurer. He's the author of Right Risk, 10 Powerful Principles for Taking Giant Leaps with Your Life. Bill, give us your website, please.
Website is www.giantleapconsulting.com. That's giantleapconsulting.com.
And you help people do a lot of different things, especially to take risks in a calculated way, don't you?
I help people take risks, and I help companies be more courageous through strategic planning and innovation workshops.
And when they get to your website, I know they can find your book there. What else will they find there?
Oh, they'll find links to the different services we offer, like executive coaching and training programs, and really customized workshops around leadership and team development. And the central question for us is always, are you being courageous enough as a person and
right.
as a company?
You know, I'm thinking about, As we mentioned, courage, and also I mentioned Donald Duck earlier. I think you may have heard me say that it's Donald Duck's birthday. He's 70 years old today. Somebody who could do a pretty darn good Donald Duck impression, I understand, was somebody who I think about when I think about a leader, when I think about somebody who had courage, and that's Ronald Reagan.
You know, that's a great point. For me, I spent 8 years, like the rest of us, with Ronald Reagan, and I always had the sense of, you know, we use that term, the father of our country, and the fact that he was a little bit older, I actually enjoyed that. I really felt secure with somebody who was fatherly. He had such grace. He was he was really somebody he could look up to as a president. And
you didn't expect him to be perfect. You did believe that he was in it for your best interests.
You definitely did. You knew that his motives were in the right place. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was an honest guy, and that came through.
Mm-hmm. But his leadership and his courage, when other people told him what he was about to do wasn't a good idea because it wasn't politically expedient or it was too bold, you know, he still said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall." And that took courage, didn't it?
It did, and I think it took courage to not have to drive his agenda by the polls, right?
Right.
I mean, like some other presidents we've had, they're constantly,
right,
you know, checking the polls to decide what they should do. And Reagan wasn't like that. When he decided to pursue the Star Wars initiative, or when he, you know, called them the evil empire, and people are like, I can't believe that he did that.
Right.
But in retrospect, had he not done that, the wall might still be up.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he did some controversial things, and that takes courage. To be a leader means that you're going to have to take stands. You're going to have to make decisions and make bold strokes. And you know what? Some people are going to be upset with you for making the bold,
mm-hmm,
stroke. And yet he did so in a way that was self-assured and confident. And yet he also had political savvy enough that, you know, they talked fondly about his relationship with Tip O'Neill, even though they were on different sides of the aisle, that at the end of the day they were good buddies.
So his risks were more calculated than maybe we, and more educated than maybe we thought at the time, and that's one of the things that you propose, isn't it?
It is that, you know, when you are in the midst of your own courage, you're in the midst of your own evolution, and we exist on a big continuum, Jim, that we are either moving towards our courage or we're moving towards our cowardice in every situation, and we have to decide which way to go.
Say that again, Bill.
Well, you know, we sort of live on a big continuum. And that at any given moment when we're faced with a challenging situation, our question becomes, am I going to operate, mm-hmm, in a courageous way, or am I going to move away from this in a cowardice way?
And that's a good thing to check our position on in any decision we're making, isn't it?
Indeed. I mean, think of the times when you've got somebody who's intimidating you, and you avoid the conflict simply because, really, you're afraid of engaging in the conflict. That's a movement towards your cowardice. And I think that the more times that you do that, the more cowardly you become, after a while, it becomes very difficult to operate in a courageous way.
Right. Yeah, you get comfortable as a coward, don't you?
Exactly. And so I advocate that a person can maintain a risk regimen. They should be doing something that occasionally causes their palms to sweat so much that they know that they're outside of their comfort zone.
Right.
So we should be walking around occasionally with sweaty palms.
How do we differentiate, though, between feeling like we're being cowardly and using discretion?
You're right, because discretion matters. You know,
and it is the better part of valor.
It is. There's a guy named Ed Visters. He's actually been to the top of Mount Everest 5 times. But the first 2 times, he was within spitting distance of the summit.
Now has he been back down 5 times? Because sometimes they make it up, but they don't make it down. So he has made 5 round trips, right?
Yes, it's interesting you say that, because his famous quote is that getting up is optional, getting down is mandatory.
That's right.
And the thing about Ed Visters is the first 2 times he climbed the mountain, within spitting distance of the summit, he actually walked back down because the climate had changed, and he knew the conditions have been unsafe. So here, after thousands of dollars of preparation, months of preparation and exercise, and he walked away. That was a risk for him. There's other people who might have summited and perhaps lost their lives.
That was
the
discretion.
But he wasn't willing to do so. Exactly. Discretion is discipline.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we have to be, the challenge with a risk is very often it's a temptation. And we have to recognize when the risk has too much of a hypnotic trance on us. Because sometimes we operate solely out of greed, and that's a terrible position to be making a move in front of.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you get into Enron and Tyco
Absolutely.
And WorldCom and such.
Absolutely.
So we have to ask ourselves more than, what will this risk get me? We have to ask ourselves, where will this risk take me?
Mm-hmm.
How will it, not just about compensation, but about destination?
Right. Bill Treasurer, that's going to have to be the last word. Well done today. Thank you for bringing this important perspectives. The book is called Right Risk. Give us the website again.
www.giantleapconsulting.com. And as always, Jim, thanks for having me on your show.
It's a lot of fun. We'll do it again real soon. Bill Treasurer, ladies and gentlemen, put an R on the end of that. Treasurer, 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'll be right back.
Lose you, and I don't know where I am going.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.